I hope you can find your way to the book of John, John's Gospel number 9, chapter 9 there. But as you're turning there, let me throw out the question I took to several people this week in a variety of settings, and I really toyed around with just taking some minutes on the front end of this message to say, what would your answer be? If you could ask Jesus any question you wanted to right now, I mean, see, someday when we get to heaven, we're going to ask questions about things that, you know, puzzle us. Maybe we'll do this. But if you could ask Jesus a question today, what would it be? And I thought, if I throw that out there now, some of us are rather intimidated to speak out in a group, and I get that. And then most of us, though, are saying, huh, I don't know. I never thought about that. And then you're saying, what would I say? But I think what I'd like to do is just take you into some of these. Maybe it will provoke a question or two. The reason I'm asking this question now is because although this series of messages have been on the questions Jesus asked when he was walking this earth, the people, and he still brings the truth of those questions to us today, our very start to this message starts with a question that was asked of Jesus. Not one that he posed, but one that was asked of him. If you could ask a question, you might have it already formulated, thought about it before. Here's some that I have down to prompt your thinking. Some of them have been gathered from people right here. Here's a question. Will my unbelieving family members be saved? They aren't at the moment, but will that happen? Here's another one. How did you create something out of nothing? Some of you will relate to this one. Can you help me understand the eternal past? I know what everlasting looks like. I had a beginning. I can imagine that, but I don't understand eternity past. What did you do before you created everything? We're locked in time, so that one's a hard one. Here's one. Why didn't you destroy Lucifer before he messed up Adam and Eve? Yeah. Why did you love a person like me? Huh. Some of you will relate to this. What's the real story on predestination? Here's a heavy one. Why was my brother killed in a tragic car accident at the age of 16? My parents were never the same, even though their faith never wavered. Got a question like that? Why did you accept half of Zacchaeus' possessions when he came to you, but you required the rich young ruler to give all of his possessions away? Now, I don't know what questions you might have asked of God if you were given that assurance that he would answer right now, but maybe some of those get us into that. And I wonder, what would it be like to walk with Jesus and ask a question of him when it came to your mind and he was right there? Well, that's where we are in John's Gospel, chapter 9. Jesus is going to ask the question later on, but we go way into the story before he gets to the question, will you believe? That's the question, do you believe? That's what he'll ask, but it doesn't start that way. It starts with a question. So let's look at the text. Beginning of verse 1, it says, and as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus answered, it was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. We've got these verses read, and we start with this question for Jesus. Don't miss the fact that what we find here in the very first verse is what we pulled out last week as well when we were in chapter 5. Jesus saw this individual, and he had been blind since birth. That's given right there. He saw and he knew. Remember, that's what we dwelt on for a portion of our time last week. He looks at us, he sees our circumstances, he knows what's going on right there. And the disciples asked the question out of a presupposition that they had, and it was faulty. Obviously, if this guy had a problem, if he was blind since birth and he was known as he's there, asking for people to support him with a few coins, surely there's got to be a cause and effect in here. It was commonly taught that if there's a problem like this, it's traceable to some sin, some infraction. And that was taught because in the Old Testament, if you remember, within the law, if people followed God, there was a place of blessing. That was what was elevated. And if you don't heed to the commands of the Lord, there may be hardship and difficulty and judgment that comes. And don't pretend to get around it. I'm the Lord. You know, you'd find verses like that. And some people even taught, some of the rabbis taught, that maybe if someone had a birth defect, either a sin was committed while in the womb, or it was the parents' fault. You know, after all, the Bible does say that the Lord will visit the iniquities of the fathers upon the third and fourth generation. Maybe that was what was in view here. It was interesting. I found this in one of the rabbinical documents here in Shabbat 55a. It says, "There is no death without sin and no suffering without iniquity." Somehow in those rabbinic documents, this idea was stated quite that way. If you're going to have suffering, it's traceable to iniquity. If there's some hardship, it's because sin has been committed. And what did Jesus say? No, it's not because of that. It's so that the works of God might be displayed in him. That's how it ends, verse 3. So evidently, it wasn't, first off, it wasn't that this man that was blind was completely sin-free, nor was his parents. That wasn't his point. He was just saying, it's not because of their actions that he is blind. The other thing I'd say is, it doesn't mean that it couldn't be attributed to some sin. It might be, but here he's saying, now that's not the case right here. And then he says this, we must work while it's daytime. Does that strike you? Here's Jesus talking with, we must be about this task, the task that the Father has given me to do. There's going to be a time when night's here, we won't be able to do this. And so I want you to be active involved in this. And so what happened next? What happened? Let's look at verse 6. Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. And then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam. And then John says, okay, that word, Siloam, that means sent. So he went and washed and he came back seeing. We read those sentences and slow down here and be amazed for a moment, would you? This guy was born blind. He could not see. Suddenly, he washes where Jesus sends him. He makes him go wash the stuff out of his eyes. He's spitting on the ground, puts this stuff right there, and then tells him to go find his way. Well, isn't that nice? Not only is the guy incapable of seeing, but now he's got this other stuff, and then he's told to go wash in the pool of Siloam. That doesn't sound too convenient, but it involves some kind of action on his part to go wash this stuff out. When he does, he can see. Can you imagine that moment? Your eyes open and they take in color. They take in texture. I mean, we're talking high definition now. The jolt to the eyes And this guy's life would have been crazy. I tried to imagine what this was like. I've been wearing glasses since I was about 7, maybe 8. And I remember coming out with my first pair of prescription eyeglasses, and it was December, and it was Christmas time in downtown Muskegon, and the lights were on. Do you know, everything was crystal clear. I was just looking. Now, I could see color. I could see, but everything was in sharp focus, and I was amazed. One other time when I was mesmerized by what I saw, it's when the Austin family went from black and white TV to color. Yes, I am that old. Ed brought it in, and my folks were not even bold enough to say, we're keeping this thing. They led me to believe that this was a trial. The news came on. I'm watching some guy in a suit sitting behind a desk with the most brilliant blue background I'd ever seen, and I'm a kid watching the news because I was enamored with what I had seen. All I can imagine is if I could not see, and suddenly the Lord opens up my eyes and I can see an array of colors. I had never seen a color of grapes before. I hadn't seen the texture on things that are growing. I hadn't seen the shades of green or tan, the color of dirt, the sky, the cloud. Everything is now before me. And you think this is a fantastic thing. Now you think this guy is just beside himself with this. And it looks so cool. And where do we go from here? You think, well, this is going to be good. But no, there's an interrogation that starts. And it's not just with one or two people, but you're going to see the cascading events here. Look at what it says next in here. And we won't probably get to read all the whole text. We're going to take the whole text in today because we need it. But here's what it says. Verse 8, the neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? And some said, it is he. And others said, no, but he is like him. No, he just looks like him. And the guy's response is, no, I'm the guy. I am the man. So they said to him, then how were your eyes opened? And he answered, the man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes. And he said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and I received my sight. And they said, so where is he now? I do not know. And you think, okay, so no big deal. They're curious. You were the guy that were begging all the time, and now you're seeing what happened. He tells them the story. But then they say, somebody else has got to be aware of this. Do you see what's going on in verse 13? They bring him to the Pharisees. How come they bring him to the Pharisees? They brought him to the Pharisees, the man who had been formerly been blind. Now it was a Sabbath day, and oop, let's stop. Yep. Sabbath day problem again, just like before. It was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. So the Pharisees again ask him how he'd received his sight. He goes through it again. Why was this now a bigger deal? Why was it necessary for the Pharisees to be involved? Well, because the neighbors said, it's the Sabbath. You remember last time we were talking about all the crazy rules, 39 of them that were tied into obeying the Sabbath? Yeah, and there were ones that said what you could or could not do regarding your crops. And remember, there was that one that said you couldn't move things from one distance to another, only a limited amount of space, otherwise it would be considered work. You can't work on the Sabbath day. And there was how far you could walk on a Sabbath day. Otherwise, it's expending too much work. So there was a Sabbath day journey. And regarding the whole building process, they had reduced it to this. You couldn't spit on the ground. Were they worried about the hygiene? No. Because if someone spit on the ground and your saliva mixed with the dust there, that would form the potential of mud, the very stuff that you would use to build with. So you mix up this stuff to make bricks or to seal this stuff, and so you're now creating building material by spitting on the ground. So let's not do that. We'll make a rule that says you can't spit on the ground. Why did Jesus spit on the ground, put the mud on his eyes? I can't say for certain, but I have a hunch it was, I'm taking it to another one of your man-made rules. It's so that you'll have to see the line. You've got to do something in this. And who is calling the shots? And the Pharisees were upset with that. And so they're saying, that's not good. This is a bad deal. And so as they get it and they interview him, they're talking to him and they say, how did you receive your sight? And he tells them again. And it says, some of the Pharisees said, verse 16, this man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath. But others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? It's impossible for that to happen. And there was division among them. So now the Pharisees are banging at each other because they had a different views. You want a current picture? Put our political leaders together. Tell them to solve a problem. And they're going to come at that. They're going to be on different sides of that in all of about 15 seconds because they will not agree on that. So that's what we have here. Once, and this guy, he's a Sabbath breaker. There's no way he could be used by God. But the other argument was, but then how do we explain what happened? It's just not possible to have it both ways. So then they decide, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk to this guy again. So they bring him in again. So they said again, verse 17, to the blind man, what do you say about him since he's opened your eyes? And that guy said, he's a prophet. He's got to be a prophet. And the Jews did not believe that he had been blind and that he received his sight until they called the parents of the man. And they're looking and say, well, something else has got to be here. We're missing a piece of this. Maybe he wasn't really blind. See, maybe it was a temporary thing, and somehow it straightened out, and it just looks like a miraculous thing happened. And so they bring the parents in and fire three questions at him. And the first two, the parents say, okay, well, we can answer these. Number one, is this your son? Yes. Was he born blind? Yes, he was born blind. And then how does he say, we don't know how he got his sight right now. He's of age. He's an adult. Ask him. That was the reply. Why did they do that? The scripture tells us because they were afraid of the Jews. See, the Jews had the ability to cancel him. We know what that word means now, don't we? If they get canceled, what that means is their social life is turned over, upside down. It's disconnected from everybody. That their economic impact to that, they can't be, not just in the synagogue now, but that was the culture. So if someone else had a wedding going on and you're inviting everybody, this family doesn't get invited. They're not part of the group. And when this family has something to sell in their store or out of their abundance, food source that they would normally barter and trade with somebody, they didn't have that privilege anymore. So the parents said, well, we don't want to go here. He's old enough. You can ask him. We'll just sit back here and let you determine what to do then. But and so they were afraid of the Jews. There was an economic cost to that. So they bring the conversation back to him again. Verse 24 says, so for a second time, they called a man who had been blind, and they said to him, give God the glory. Now they're getting serious. They want, they're admonishing him, you must give God the glory in this. We know that this man, this Jesus you've talked about, is a sinner. They pass judgment on him. Where's Jesus at this point? He's not mentioned. You can look through here. He didn't show up for a while yet. There's 28 verses where they're putting him in a legal case here, trying to figure it out, and he's not even there to respond. But they have declared already, we know that this guy is a sinner. And the man that was just healed, now he can see whether he's a sinner. I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. And he said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? Now you think, well, this is a category, this belongs in the Department of Redundancy Department. He just went through that a few times. And now they're asking him again. I love how he responded. He said, I told you already. And you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to be his disciples? I'm talking about spilling a little gas on the fire here. And then they reviled him, saying, you are his disciple, but we're disciples of Moses. So they're losing the logic on this, but that's where they start firing out names. You know, we're going to call them names. We're disciples of Moses. We know that God's spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. And then the man says, well, that's rather pompous. Oh, it doesn't say pompous in our Bibles. Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. There's nothing wrong with that logic. The Pharisees would be forced to agree with that. Then he goes on, never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And then they answered him, you were born in sin. And you would teach us, and they cast him out. Oh, let me tell you, when he had his sight restored, he was now able to provide the offering of cleansing and then participate in synagogue life and Jewish life because he was now considered whole again. So Jesus makes it possible for him to step back in to the life of the religious people there. And all of a sudden, he's kicked back out again. How long was he there? No more than a couple of hours at the most. We're not told, but he's there. Boom, he's out again because he chose to speak about the goofiness of the declaration that Jesus had to be a sinner that was not used by God at all. And they cast him out. The logic was there. You see this whole progression going, and they were doing all this, and Jesus wasn't even around. Now, you got to ask the question, so how does it go from we won't see this to we can't see this? Can I give a warning to us? Because what we do here in our circles is we take this very critical view of the Pharisees and say, you know, those guys, I'm telling you, they were just, Jesus said they were whitewashed tombs, that there was something hypocritical about them. They were just way off the mark. And that's what our normal reaction is. We see this and say, their logic was so bad. The hypocrisy was over the top. And let me tell you that this same kind of thing creeps in to church people. It creeps in to those that are tagging along, following Jesus, trying to make some sense out of what's going on here. And in effect, we get to the same spot. How and why does that happen? What do you mean it happens? There's another place in Scripture where we can prove it happens to those that are close to Jesus, those that are following him. In fact, it's really close. You'd have to go to Mark 8 to see this account, but it's the story where Jesus is in a boat with his disciples, and they were out there, and he makes a comment about, you got to watch out for the Pharisees, the leaven that they have in there. And they're looking at each other, and they said, oh, that's because, what do we got here? We only have one loaf of bread? Oh, we should have planned better. There's a bunch of us in the boat. Jesus overhears this, and he fires this series of questions in a few verses at him. He says, don't you understand? I've been right here with you. We just fed thousands of people with a little bit. Is it really an issue of having only one loaf of bread? No, it's not that. Are your hearts hardened? How can you see these things but not see? Now, how come you have ears but you don't hear? Well, what's going on here? You've been with me and I'm teaching you these things. But he repeats that first question again in the text. He said, don't you understand? Do you not yet understand? What happens to us? We get sermon proof. Yeah. You look so attentive. You look good. I see eyes looking this way. I see the engagement. But you know what happens to us is sometimes we look for the information. We're listening for information. What's this piece of the Bible mean? And we forget about the transformation, the sanctification process that needs to occur in our very lives. And so we can get to the same spot that the disciples were in the boat with Jesus. And he says, don't you get it? Don't you understand? And we're looking at this story, and it suddenly is about what I can learn about the Bible, and it's because I want to be able to tell somebody what I know about the Bible, and it becomes self-centered, and it's subtle, but it can happen there. Just over a chapter or two in Mark, we've got another blind man. This guy's given a name, Bartimaeus. And that guy is sitting there, and he knows Jesus is coming, and what does he do is he starts making a ruckus, and he's yelling out, Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me. And they're trying to quiet him down, and he won't have anything of that at all. And he calls repeatedly to him, and Jesus finally turns towards him and gets there, and he says, what do you want me to do for you? And he says, Rabbi, let me please recover my sight. I want to see. That's a great prayer. That's a great request for you to present to God. Lord, I just want to see. I want to see with accuracy. I want to see what you are doing. I want to have that, and I'm missing that. The Lord, when he heals this man's eyesight, he brings it back again. And a decision is put right in front of this man. Let's go back to the story now that we're in John, verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. That's where we just left him. And having found him, they said, do you believe in the Son of Man? The question comes in very personally. I mean, there is a point to this thing that you can't miss. He asked him, the question. He's back in here after being absent in these other verses. He set up all these circumstances to have this moment to ask this question of a man that had been blind but now is healed, a specific decision. So yes, it's personal. He saw him. He finds him again. That's what he did with the man on the mat when he was carrying it through, and he found him at the temple. He said, hey, let's talk. He did the same thing here. Now, what is with this question, do you believe in the Son of Man? That is a very specific question, and we bounce over that because we don't often refer to Jesus as the Son of Man. Oh, that's the name that Jesus used often in the Gospels to refer to himself. But it wasn't something he pulled out of the air. If you go back in Old Testament prophecies, it's mentioned there. In fact, one point where it's crystal clear is in Daniel, in chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Listen, here's what was in Daniel's vision. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like the Son of Man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that all peoples, nations, languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. That was in Daniel's vision. John picks up that same thing, and you can read about this Son of Man in Revelation 1, verses 13, right on through verse 18. The description is there, and you see this. Now, in Ezekiel's passage, Ezekiel's book, probably some 80, 90 times, Ezekiel's called a son of man. A son of man. But Jesus' question is the son of man. The epitome of this, the one I'm talking about is Daniel's view that this Messiah is the one who is establishing a kingdom that will not end. Do you believe in the Son of Man? And this Jewish man would have understood the concept from Daniel. And so he asked the question, and he says, and who is he, sir, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have seen him. First time that's probably been said about this guy. You've seen him. And it is he who is speaking to you. And he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Oh, I love this. This is not the way the guy's day started. You look at what happened. See, the Pharisees said, no, we refuse to believe that Jesus is the Christ. Can't be. And his parents, no, we're afraid to believe. But look at the progression in this guy's life. Hey, the neighbors say, who was it that healed you? Oh, it was the man Jesus. It's in there, long about verse 11, I think. And then the Pharisees drill down on it and said, who do you think this guy was that healed you? He was a prophet, at least. He spoke for God somehow. You've got that designated. Not just a man. He's a prophet. And then by the time you get to verse 38 here, he's recognized, oh, I believe that he is the Son of Man. You see this understanding. It is personally given. He's drilling down on it. I love that. There's a point that I think is critical for us to understand, that spiritual blindness is of far more significance to God than the physical blindness. He used the physical blindness to set up the ability to talk with this man about the spiritual blindness that he has. I would like to just quickly hit on this idea about spiritual blindness. All of us are spiritually blind from birth. Romans 3 says it this way, all of us have sinned. We've fallen short of God's standard, his glory. We just don't measure up no matter what happens. We can't fix our spiritual blindness at all. We come into the world with that. What are we talking about with this kind of blindness, that the one that God sets our circumstances up to showcase the work of God in our lives, he puts us in a path, and he wants us to make a same kind of decision for this that remedies this spiritual blindness. The blindness, the faith, the belief that we see, the contrasting ideas here, we can't fix our own blindness any more than this man could fix his own physical blindness. But when he said, "What do you believe?" That's going to impact it. Accept, agree with, operate on the basis of. Do you believe? Do you accept this? Are you agreeing with what is taught about the Son of Man? Will you operate on the basis of this thing? That's what is here. There's an intellectual aspect to it, but there's a very practical aspect to it too. What you think also impacts how you live, what you do, where your values go on. I look at our congregation here, and people come to Calvary for all kinds of reasons. They come because there's a crisis in their life, and they're looking for something that might help them sort that piece. It could be that some are here because they like the relaxed atmosphere. We aren't all stuck up on what is the formal way to present yourself dress-wise. We've got chairs. We don't have pews. It's a different style. We're relaxed here. They find acceptance, some kind of friendly reception here. I don't feel like I get the stiff arm and ignored when I walk in here. People come. Some come because some of you have invited them, and they show up here because of your invitation. People come for all kinds of reasons. Here's the deal. God uses all of those things because he's working in your circumstances to get you at the same point that he was the blind man. And I don't want us to miss that. He lays a plan out there for us. And I'm not talking about, do you see Jesus as a teacher, a good teacher? The moral fabric of what he taught is so good for mankind. Do you believe that Jesus did that? And some of you are saying, yes. And I'd say, great. Keep looking. Keep seeing. Be like Bartimaeus. Lord, I just want to see correctly. Do you believe that Jesus is a miracle worker, a prayer answering, divinely sent, somebody sent from God just to do this? And if you say yes, a resounding yes, that's what I believe about it. I'm saying, great, that's good. Keep looking. Keep seeking, keep observing. Do you believe that Jesus was put on a cross and that he died there and was placed in a tomb and somehow he came back to life the third day? And you say, yeah, I believe that. And I'm saying, great, that's good. Keep looking, keep seeking. Do you believe that Jesus acted in your place because you couldn't make it on your own? Your separation from God is completely out of your hands. You can't be good enough now. Do you believe that he acted on your behalf? That's why he went to the cross. See, that's what's involved in, do you believe in the Son of Man? That Messiah role, the suffering king combination is what he's asking. What did the man do? Lord, I believe. And he falls down and worships him. You see, it caused something to happen in his actions. that were right there. That's what was happening. That's what the goal of this is. And some of you have been in situations, I know you have been, where somebody says, let's share our testimonies of how we came to Christ. That's a good church word. And some say, I don't know what that means. Then we say, well, you know, the stories about our journey with God, the salvation stories that we have. And you listen in there and you're caught in that group and you're saying, man, I don't know. I listened to somebody talk, but I don't have anything that sounds like this. But you try to get something close. And so you kind of package something so it sounds similar, but you know it's not the same as what they're talking about. And you didn't have that kind of experience. And then there are some that said, well, no, but you see, I've always believed that. And I'm saying, no. No, let's think about this. If we're born with spiritual blindness that we can't fix, you can't tell me you've always believed. Now, see, what we could do is we can learn things about Jesus along the way. Yes, he's a good teacher. Yes, he's a miracle worker. Yes, he was sent by God. Yes, he went to the cross and he died and he was raised again. But it still is all out there in that kind of mind level, intellect. Yeah, I learned that about him. I've known that for a long, long time. That's not what I'm talking about. There is an awakening, a spot where Jesus is asking you, do you believe that I am the Son of Man, the suffering Savior, the Messiah? Did I interact for you? Do you grasp that? And this man hits that point, and he said, yes, that's where I am today. So if your story doesn't match in other settings, can I just tell you, would you answer the question today now? What is it that you are saying yes to in this moment? Is it turning your life to Christ, that you're going to live differently, not because you're artificially creating it? You can't be good enough on your own. This is the result of having the faith that this man had, and it changes it. And that's the message. Jesus gets into a debate. We won't go there. We got to end. But he starts talking with the Pharisees again, and he says, wait a minute, you say you can see, but when you refuse to acknowledge your blindness, you're never going to see. But I came into the world so that I could fix the blindness. And when you understand that, then you'll be able to see. You'll be able to understand this. And that's what I'm trying to convey right now. And we've got people in here all the time. And we've got kids that grow up here. And they have to get to the point where they're answering that same question. Parents. And it's not bad. It's personal. That's where we go with this. Be prepared, child of God. You know Jesus. That's the message you take to a world in need. You help them see the blindness is there because we're in our broken world and it can't be remedied apart from Christ. And if this has been a moment, aha, today, you get it, I'm praising God with you. That moment happened that day with Jesus for the blind man, but not when his eyes got fixed. It came when his heart got fixed. That's the hope we have. If it generates questions, please do not leave. If we could go from this front row all the way to the back and you'd find people there. And the punch of this really is, I talked to my friend down here the other week, we were talking and he said, you know, our church is really like an aircraft carrier. We get the message of the gospel and we go. And we take that places. This is not the cruise ship. It's not the battleship where we only fight when we're all together and we're manning our guns right here. That's not it. It's taking this message and going with it to the place where God's given us to serve. Let's pray. Father, I am so thankful for the clarity. Thank you for giving us an example of a man like this gentleman that's in John 9, or Bartimaeus, or others. I see that you called him to take an active step of obedience and to go wash. And maybe that was required for that man's heart. I don't know. But I do know that you set him on a course to have a conversation. I believe that you are doing that within our ministry here. You put people in our path. There are probably some right in our room today. And I pray that this would land with clarity on their hearts. I thank you for meeting with us. Thank you for your word. Now, Lord, as we move through this week, may our eyes be open to the needs that we have in front of us and other people. In Jesus' name, amen.